Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to Hollywood Crime Scene. This
Hi.
Is Rachel Fisher.
I'm sorry, I jumped the gun.
That's okay.
I forget all our different intros. We got a few now.
You know what? They're slightly different. Like we have, I would say the only major deviation is for Mysteries and the Macabre.
Well, that's a major.
Which is a Patreon only show.
That has a voice.
I do a special voice for that intro.
I'm Desi Jettikin. I forgot to say that.
And it is time for our main episode.
Yeah, what do we got?
Well, this week we have a very exciting story. I have returned to a book I have used as a source in the past. It's called Where the Money Is, True Tales from the Bank Robbery Capital of the World by William J. Redder and Gordon Dillo. If you don't remember, I did a story from this book about the Hole in the Ground gang.
Right.
Well, wouldn't you know, there's other really crazy stories about Los Angeles bank jobs here.
Nice.
And that's what we're going to talk about today. My other source is an article from a 2002 or 2003 issue of Gear Magazine. I don't even think they make that anymore.
I mean, probably not.
And it is by Timothy Ford. That's the writer of that article. So let's get into it. It was November of 1983, and law enforcement was still searching for the man who had robbed 40 banks across Los Angeles over the course of just 3 months. The police were losing their minds trying to get this guy, who had become known as the city's most active bank robber in LA history.
Nice.
William J. Redder, who is the author of this book I just mentioned, he was the FBI agent tasked with leading this investigation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember this. Wait, this is the guy who wrote the book really dramatically, right?
Yeah, from the Hole in the Ground yes. gang episode.
He's in the trailer. His hair is long.
Yeah.
He had like that long passage.
Yeah, that was so excellent. So William J. Redder said that this robber had left behind no usable prints. There were no license plate numbers that had been taken down by anybody. Like, no, nothing to identify this person.
Wow.
It was just like, shit, this guy's in the wind.
He's good.
He's really good. The only thing they had to go on was the surveillance footage that showed the robber wearing a Yankees baseball cap that was pulled low over his face. Like, all they could see was that he was smiling.
Ooh, creepy.
Yeah.
He's like, I love robbing banks. And the Yankees. That's my two things.
He was then dubbed the Yankee Bandit.
Ooh.
He got a nickname.
That's cute.
The Bandit was known for dressing in really nice clothing and for being overly polite to the tellers that he robbed. The Bandit sometimes robbed more than one bank a day. And on November 29th, he embarked on his most ambitious day yet. Starting at 1:30 p.m. in Hollywood, the Bandit robbed a Bank of America for $1,740. He then traveled west, stopping at different banks and robbing them. Law enforcement was alerted to each bank robbery as it happened. Linda Webster at the FBI Bank Squad office fielded these calls. She asked the banks for a description of the robber and his methods. It was the Yankee Bandit, all right. And by the end of that day, the Yankee Bandit robbed 6 banks.
Look at him. He's just taking a few thou.
No, these aren't even that big of hauls.
No, this is like his work.
This is like a job.
Yeah.
So each bank robbery yielded him between $1,000 and $4,000.
Wow.
So it's a nice haul overall. But like each bank, they were at most out $4,000.
They can write that off.
It's not a big deal. The spree was so impressive that additional resources were provided to try and catch this guy. They wanted to do stakeouts across different banks, and Redder's job was to anticipate where the bandit would hit next. He could see that the bandit liked to rob in the afternoon, often on a Friday, and that he liked robbing banks in nicer neighborhoods like Beverly Hills and West LA. Occasionally, he would go to the Valley and sometimes as far as far east as Mid-Wilshire. The Yankee bandit would sometimes rob the same bank twice. That's bold.
He's like, I'm back.
There was an incident of a teller saying, you again.
You again. Here's the, she just put the money in the bag. She ain't going to fight it.
She's been here before.
Yeah. She liked him.
He was very nice.
Yeah. But it doesn't, no skin off their back.
They're just.
Just give him the money.
Trying to get to 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
So FBI agents were deployed to 20 different banks across West LA and the Valley, but the bandit continued to elude the agents. And then in December, the bandit scored he scored over $1,000 after robbing 4 banks in one day.
Wow.
So not as much as the 6 banks in one day, but still a pretty impressive feat.
It's a good day rate, $1,000.
Yeah. Wait, I meant to write $12,000.
Oh.
I accidentally put, yeah,
so
I typed that wrong.
$12,000 is really good.
He got $12,000 after robbing 4 banks in a day.
Nice.
That's really impressive. After that job, the Yankee bandit seemed to stop. After a few weeks of no bank robberies, Redder wondered if he had died. But by late January, the bandit was back. On January 23rd, 1984, he nabbed a modest $538 at a bank in Sherman Oaks and $730 at a bank in Van Nuys. But February 1st's score was much bigger. The bandit left the first LA bank in Century City with over $14,000.
Damn.
That's a big score for one bank.
Yeah.
The total number of banks that this guy had robbed since the previous July was nearing 60.
I mean, it makes the hole-in-the-wall gang look like a bunch of chumps. Like, they could have just been robbing banks the easy way, walking in.
They didn't have Yankee baseball hats.
No, because they spent, what, months drilling out those holes and stuff, like...
Yeah, making tunnels, elaborate tunnels with ATVs.
This guy's like, no, you just walk on in. You know, it takes you a little longer to get the big bucks, but it starts adding up.
Yeah. So in total, he scored $250,000.
That's good.
But unfortunately for the Yankee bandit, his bank robbing streak was about to be over.
No.
On February 10th, he went into the First Interstate Bank in Hollywood. He did his usual routine, calmly and politely asking the teller for money, revealing that he had a gun on him. But this time, another teller at the bank noticed what was going on, and so this teller followed him out of the bank as he was leaving. The bandit spotted this teller following him on the sidewalk. Then the teller spotted a customer, like, sitting outside in their car, and he was like, hey, that guy, I'm sorry to bother you, sir, but we need to follow this guy.
Why can't he just leave it alone? This teller is going above and beyond for no reason.
So that's when the bandit is like, shit, they're tailing me. And he just like grabbed some cash out of his briefcase and he starts tossing it onto the street as he's trying to get away from these guys.
A stunt queen.
The teller and the bank customer continued their pursuit. As the bandit passed by a group of kids hanging out on the corner of Franklin and Vine, the teller shouted to the kids, stop that man! But the kids told him to fuck off. The bandit continued walking. He was now heading south on Vine. He thought he would get away when the bank customer's car got stuck in rush hour traffic on Vine. But the teller then spotted a nearby cop on a motorcycle. He alerted him to the bandit, and the cop chased him down. By the time the bandit had dropped his briefcase and put his hands in the air, more cops showed up, guns drawn. They got him. The bandit's name was Eddie Dodson.
Eddie.
Let's talk about Eddie Dodson.
I'm so mad at this fucking goody two-shoes teller.
He
probably got like a little button from the corporate, like a good deed button and a certificate.
He didn't even get any cash.
No, fucking idiot. Bootlicker.
So Dodson was born Edwin Chambers Dodson on December 25th, 1948 in North Carolina. He was raised in a nice, loving Christian family, and according to him, he had everything he needed. Despite his wholesome Christian upbringing, though, Dodson's first brush with the law came in the late 60s when he was a college student at the University of North Carolina. He had been dealing weed and eventually he got busted. Worried about the serious charge of marijuana possession in 1960s North Carolina, he skipped bail and fled to New York, where he lived under an assumed name. Luckily for Dodson, his lawyer ended up being able to make this drug charge disappear. And in 1972, he moved out west to Los Angeles and got a job working at his friend's antique store. Eventually, he opened his own antique shop on Melrose.
Nice.
He named it Dodson's. And this store was a hit.
Oh, good.
They loved Dodson's antiques. He had an eye for antiques, and the pieces that he collected from rummage sales. I was going to stop. What did I say?
Rubbing shit? I don't know what you said. I'm crying.
This is a wordy episode.
It's fine.
This is so wordy. So the antique store was a hit. He had an eye for antiques. And the pieces that he collected from rummage sales and estate sales were then marked up and sold for a pretty penny at his store. He had a lot of business, including from celebrities like Barbara Streisand, Lily Tomlin,
ooh,
Jack Nicholson, Tony Perkins, and Joan Collins.
Wow.
They loved Dodson's antiques.
Well, this is a top-tier celebrity clientele, right?
Even Liberace.
And he loves crap. He must have had some gold candelabras.
If I ran an antique store or any kind of like accessory decor and Liberace stopped in, I'd be like, that's it. That's the stamp of approval.
Yeah, I have a great eye. What can I help you with, Mr. Liberace?
So yeah, he has like a really cool clientele. And not only that, but because of this like massively increased Eddie Dodson's cachet, and he became a real man about town in LA, rubbing shoulders with the rich and famous and attending the hottest parties. Dodson's whole vibe was just cool.
I mean, I can tell.
He was a cool guy. He wore good clothes. He had a cute townhouse in Hancock Park, and he drove my dream car. A 1965 black Lincoln Continental with suicide doors.
Ooh.
He wasn't the hottest guy, but he had serious charm. So he was like that guy that's like, okay, on paper, maybe he's not hot, but if you know him, he's really hot.
Yeah.
He also hung out with a lot of cool people, and he was actually just a really nice guy. So women loved him.
Ooh.
According to his friend, Bud Cort.
Wow.
Who you may know as Harold.
Yeah.
In Harold and Maude. He said, quote, "He just loved to close up shop, pick a place, and party. Eddie was the ringmaster and certainly one of the most seductive ladies' men around."
This is like a dream life. Yeah. Running an antique store and then living it up at night. It sounds fun.
It sounds so fun. Dodson's antique shop itself became a party destination, as he would host ragers after hours with the coolest people in the city. He loved to party, and by the late 70s, Eddie Dodson was doing a lot of cocaine.
Uh-oh.
He's doing cocaine off all his antiques.
Nice. He's got like a mirrored 1920s Coca-Cola tray.
Yeah. He tried his first speedball in 1979. Uh-oh. And he loved it.
Yeah.
Around this time, he was dating Marissa Berenson.
Wow.
And she rolled with some heavy hitters.
Yeah. I mean, she was like a total it girl.
Yeah.
At this period.
And now she is an it boy boyfriend.
This is crazy. He ran in these circles.
This guy's Instagram would have been crazy.
No, it would have been like FOMO.
Yeah. So Dodson was partying with some of the biggest stars of the day, including the Rolling Stones, apparently.
This is very rare for an antique salesman to get this high up into the world, don't you think?
This kind of is my dream.
I'm just in love with this character.
He's incredible, Desi.
Yeah, like, I love him.
He's actually incredible.
His worst quality is the Yankees cap.
Yeah, there's always one thing. So this is what Dodson said about Keith Richards and Ronnie. He said, Keith and Ron stole heroin every chance they'd get. I had to shake them down when they left. They were the rolling thieves.
Wow. He dragged their asses.
By the early 80s, Los Angeles saw a huge influx of Persian brown heroin following the Iranian Revolution.
Oh.
Dodson's, I didn't know that's a fun
that's
fact.
That's interesting, yeah.
That's a fun fact. Dodson's dealer was a Persian immigrant named Hojet, and he was an acrobat for a circus back in Iran.
I love everyone having two different sides, bank robber, antiques, acrobat, Persian heroin salesman. You got to have two jobs.
No, I read that like in the Gear article, Eddie said that this guy would just like get into weird contortionist poses when he'd go to his house.
I love it.
To pick up his drugs. Ugh,
this is such a great period in LA.
I know. I'm so jealous.
It's just so fun.
So Dodson loved heroin, but it was expensive. And his habit was costing him hundreds of dollars a day, especially considering that he was smoking it, which is not nearly as cost effective as shooting it.
Oh.
And like many drug addicts, we don't like to keep regular hours, Desi. So Dodson's shop would often be closed during business hours and basically only open at night when he would have these huge parties.
So his business, he was sort of like letting it slide.
He's like not doing the business. He's just like hosting parties at an antique shop.
He's got like one of those signs where it's like by appointment only. You're like, when is this store fucking open?
Dude, one time I walked by this antique shop like around here and it said by appointment only on the door and I got so discouraged. I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to come back because like I'm too lazy to pick up the phone and make an appointment.
But also, don't you feel like a pressure to if you make their ass come down to the store and open
and then
you
have to buy something? Don't buy something.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't want to make you come down. I just want to browse.
I just like browsing.
Yeah. I might buy something, but...
I might buy something.
Yeah, I will never call someone for an appointment. Forget it.
It's I don't like happening. It.
I feel too much pressure.
I need to go in and touch all the stuff. Like, feel it and see it.
Learn how to have a store, please.
No, but this guy was also doing that thing that smoothie place we used to go to all the time did, where it was like, I don't know, sometimes we're open, sometimes we're not.
I just can't. It's like, okay.
Yeah, this is like very addict behavior. One person who liked to come by the antique shop to party was John Belushi.
Well, I mean.
Anywhere there was a speedball.
He's there.
He's fucking there. And him and Dodson really got along. They loved getting high together. He would even spend some time in John Belushi's suite at the Chateau in the weeks leading up to his death.
Oh my God.
By the summer of 1983, Eddie Dodson was addicted to heroin and out of money. But he was unwilling to part with any of his fancy possessions to support himself. He's like, I'm not getting rid of my, walnut credenza. That's not happening.
He's like the antique salesman who actually, it's like, that's actually not for sale. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean?
Okay.
It's like the thing you want.
Okay, but how come that would be me? If that would be the problem.
I agree. Because I would be like, well, let me think about it. Because you want a certain price, but you also want to know the person appreciates it.
That's actually not for sale. When they see you kind of hovering around.
Yeah. No, they're like, no.
Excuse me, my grubby little mitts won't be taking this yeah. home.
No, I totally would be the same way.
So he's like, I'm not getting rid of all my cool shit in my Hancock Park townhouse. I'm not getting rid of the Lincoln Continental.
No.
I'm not getting rid of my cashmere sweaters.
There's truly only one other option for
him. Well, that's what he said. He's like, I need to keep getting high. I'm spending like $500 a day on heroin.
Yeah. He just needs heroin money.
He needs heroin money and he needs it now. And he's not getting a real job or opening up his shop.
Relatable.
He wants to rob banks.
Yeah.
So he's like kicking around this idea about like, well, what if I just rob a bank? And while he was getting high with his friends one day, Eddie Dodson announced this idea. And then he begins complaining about his financial difficulties. I love this. He says, they should just give us money.
Yes. What a king. He could have run for president on this platform.
Then he said, outlaws are the can openers in the supermarket of life.
He's a philosopher.
Dodson felt that he was like just owed some money for some fun.
He put a lot into the world, making it a better place. Why shouldn't we be giving him a little kickback?
He also was beginning to think about how the idea of being an outlaw was just kind of romantic.
Yeah. I mean, for sure.
So let's take a quick break here and we'll be right back and talk about what happened.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So Eddie Dodson prepared to rob his first bank. He bought a starting pistol, which is that pistol that you use in like a race.
Right.
It doesn't have an actual bullet in it. It shoots blanks. Yes. Just makes a big sound.
It has a little white flag.
And says bang.
Yes.
So he buys one of those because he's very nonviolent.
He just, yeah.
But he needs a prop.
Yeah.
He needs a prop to rob a bank. So he gets a starting pistol. He didn't even purchase the blanks for this gun. He thought that was a bridge too far.
Right. He's like, I'm going to charm them. They're going to see the gun and just hand over the cash.
Yeah. And on July 5th, 1983, Eddie Dodson headed out to rob a bank. That morning, he got dressed in a nice white shirt, black slacks, and Pumas. He carried a leather briefcase where he stashed a Yankees baseball hat and his starting gun. He pulled up in his Lincoln Continental to a bank on Larchmont.
Dude, the absolute gall of robbing a bank with a Lincoln Continental. That is genius.
He walked into the bank and got in line. When he approached the teller, he put his briefcase on the counter and revealed his gun. Dodson said, quote, you know what? This is a robbery. That's literally what he said.
I love it.
After he was given the cash, Dodson put on the Yankees hat and calmly walked out the door. Though he would only collect $991, he left the bank without incident. And he was like, oh my God, that was so easy.
That's 2 days of heroin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he got a rush from it too.
I'm sure you're like, I cannot believe that fucking worked. I'd be shocked too.
No, because robbing a bank is like, sounds like the most stressful endeavor ever.
Well, you also, everything we know, it's like, months of planning. Do you know what I mean? Like
we see in movies that like complicated heists.
Yes. And it's always like super difficult. You need to get an inside man and like
digging holes under the ground.
Yeah. It's always like really difficult or dangerous.
Well, not for Dodson, because by October, he robbed 22 banks.
This is, he has a charmed life, like to get away with this.
Yeah. He explained that robbing a bank just came down to having the right attitude.
That's what he's like, vibe check.
He said, quote, "It's all about confidence. So I put some time into making sure I had the right look. Sometimes cashmere, sometimes leather, so that I was feeling confident and looking good."
Oh my God, a self-care king. Like, he's ahead of his time.
Then I'd roll blasting the Sex Pistols or Tom Waits or Chuck Berry, sucking up the outlaw thing until I spotted a bank. So he had like a whole, he created it like a whole movie montage for himself.
I love it. I love that he's wearing cashmere but listening to the Sex Pistols. It's like this dichotomy.
It's a hot move.
Yeah, this is hot.
Dodson also explained what to do once you're inside the bank.
Oh.
He said, quote, "Don't look around, don't hurry, say hello and be courteous. Put the valise on the counter, unzipped, apologize, and then tell her about the gun and ask for large bills. Please keep smiling, thank her, calmly fill the bag, ask her to back away from that alarm button, pull out your Yankees hat, and smile as you pull it down low."
Wow.
That's how he did it.
Yeah.
Just very calm.
It is true. I think people pick up on your vibe. And if you are calm and like friendly, they're going to be like, okay, he's not going to hurt me. I don't have to panic.
Yeah.
Push the button. I don't have to be scared.
Yeah. So he continued explaining that you always walk out of the bank super calm, never appearing as if you're in a rush and not acting too excited. He never sped off when he got into his car. Everything had to appear super normal.
Good. I like it.
There were a few close calls, though. Because Eddie Dodson liked to sleep in, he would sometimes arrive at the banks right before closing on three different...
Sleep in that way. He liked to sleep in. He rolled out at 5 p.m. Yeah.
There were like three different times that Eddie got locked in the bank as he was trying to leave. Like the person didn't see there was one more customer, like the security guy.
Oh, and they locked the door.
You know how they do that? So no one else can get in.
Right.
And then they have to unlock it for you. So that happened three different times.
That's scary.
But he was so chill that another employee, not the person he had just robbed,
right,
was like, "Oh, sir, let me get that for you."
And he's like, "See? Calm, cool, and collected."
One time when he was leaving the bank, he saw that he had a flat tire.
Ugh.
And he's like, shit.
Then he just calmly changed the tire, called AAA.
He actually went to a nearby service station that was like in eyesight of the bank. He got his tire changed.
Oh my God.
As the police cars are racing down the street.
Yeah. I mean, this is very... I fully agree with this type of crime, like criming. Because that's what I used to do back in the day when I would smoke pot in public. I'd be like, no, you just smoke in public. Like, you're just smoking a cigarette. There's nothing weird. You're not hiding anything. That's what I used to do.
Yeah, he's just like, everything's completely as it should be.
Because cops get, they, when they see you being suspicious, that's when they come up to you. When you're like hiding in your car smoking weed. That's the only time I got busted.
Mm.
And it was because I was being a little suspicious bitch in my car, token up.
Mm.
Got my fucking pot thrown in the river.
Yeah, they always throw it out.
It's like, fuck you. Just give it to me. You dork.
The funniest incident to me occurred when an actress that Dodson knew spotted him as he was leaving the bank.
Oh, my God.
And she was like, oh, my God, Eddie, hey, what's up?
Awkward.
And since he's not an asshole, he wasn't like, shut the fuck up, bitch.
Get out of here, bitch.
He was just like, hey. And she was in her car. She was driving a purple Volkswagen Bug.
Of course.
And he's like, can you give me a ride somewhere? And so he just calmly got in her car and she gave him a ride.
Oh my God.
But that was definitely a close call.
Yes.
Dodson wasn't just addicted to heroin. Now he was also addicted to robbing banks.
It's so easy.
He's making it look really easy.
This is crazy.
By the end of November, he had robbed 40 banks in the LA area.
During, this is just a few months, right?
This is a few months.
Damn.
During the Yankee Bandits 5-week break that happened over the winter, and the FBI guy's like, well, maybe he's dead. He was actually in London with his girlfriend and her family. Now, his friend back home in LA spotted a bank surveillance picture of Eddie in the newspaper. And he called him in London and was like, dude, I just saw your picture in the paper.
Oh, shit.
You should probably stay in London. But he didn't stay there. He came back to LA and robbed more banks until he was finally caught by that teller.
Fuck him.
And his little comrade.
The customer.
Who
had nothing better to do. Just fucking nothing better to do.
Than sit in rush hour traffic on Franklin and Vine.
What do you care? It doesn't affect you at all.
I would be so irritated if I was like sitting in my car about to leave the bank and the bank teller came out and was like, can you give me a ride?
Sir, please. It's like, no, go away, nerd. You go bust him yourself. I'm not helping. This guy's a hero.
Dodson was arrested after his attempted robbery of the First Interstate Bank in Hollywood. Down at the station, FBI agent Biff Flanagan.
What?
His name is...
He sounds annoying.
Biff Flanagan. He remarked to William J. Redder, the Yankee Bandit's actually a pretty nice guy.
See? We all agree.
Everybody, all these FBI agents, they all loved him. They thought he was like so nice.
They were like, sorry, we have to arrest you.
Yeah. So during this 7-month bank robbing spree, Eddie Dodson robbed a total of 64 banks.
Wow.
And collected over $250,000.
Pretty good.
Unfortunately for Eddie Dodson, not only was he caught, but he was about to be seriously dope sick, as he was going to suffer from the effects of heroin withdrawal while in custody.
Oh, no.
Following his arraignment, Dodson was charged with 25 counts of bank robbery. He was appointed an attorney who managed to get him a plea deal. He was sentenced to 15 years in a federal prison. And while incarcerated, Dodson managed to score enough drugs to stay high for the next several years.
Phew.
And he was popular in prison.
Of course.
They
this
loved
guy
him.
Is a fucking legend.
He met this guy who came up to him and he was like, oh my God, you're the Yankee Bandit. And he's like, nice to meet you. I'm the plaid shirt bandit.
This is like the exact opposite of like when a child molester goes into prison. Everyone hates them and they have to be in protective. Like this is like legend coming in and everyone has mad respect for them.
Right. So the Yankee Bandit was famous.
Imagine being that likable. Like, everyone loves this guy.
They love him.
What? I mean, it's like the prisoners, the cops. No one has that much crossover appeal.
Like, the tellers.
It's crazy.
Celebrities.
Yeah. I mean,
they love him.
Yeah.
He was released on parole in 1995 and was offered a job by Jack Nicholson to take care of his house in the Santa Monica Mountains. So Dodson was just allowed to live at Jack Nicholson's like beach house.
Another dream job.
And Jack Nicholson only stayed at this house a few times a year for days.
That's where I'm always like, how do I get that? Where people are like, and I live in this rich person's guest house that's actually a mini mansion for free, but I have to watch their dog twice a year.
Right.
You know, I was like, I've never had that situation happen to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's so cool.
I know. So he is staying at Jack Nicholson's house, but being on parole meant that he was subject to drug testing. And he's an addict, so he's having a really difficult time staying sober. He was doing coke and heroin again, and this time he was shooting it. Eventually, his parole officer ordered him to go to treatment. When he was released, he relapsed, and his drug use became so bad that Jack Nicholson had to kick him out. After his parole ended, Dodson was out of money. He was crashing at his friends' houses. He didn't have any place to live.
This is where he becomes less popular, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's still not interested in finding a regular, boring job. Like, he went to an employment agency and he's like, this sucks.
He's like, do you have antique store owner? That's my skill. Bon vivant.
It's kind of like how in the game of life, I always wanted to be entertainer.
Yeah.
Or superstar. It was
the entertainer.
It was superstar. That's what it was called.
Oh my God.
So he's like, I'm just going to have to rob banks again.
No, he didn't.
Yeah, he did.
He's probably not as good.
Well, he, in January of 1999, he robbed a Bank of America in Beverly Hills and made out with nearly $13,000.
Damn.
This time he used a toy gun in the robbery.
He's like, still got it.
He maintained his signature politeness.
Of course, it worked.
6 weeks later, he robbed another Beverly Hills bank, scoring him $3,460. But unlike 1980s Eddie Dodson, he was no longer robbing banks looking sharp in his nice clothing with his Italian leather briefcase. Drug addiction had ravaged him. His clothes were a lot shittier too. So he just kind of looks like a, who's this guy?
Yeah. And he probably was a little more sketchy.
He's a little more sketchy looking.
And like he probably had a little like, you know, drug sort of addict behavior. Not as smooth and like chill.
Yeah. He wasn't as, I don't know if he was as smooth. He was definitely as polite.
Right, but he probably had a little more anxiety about it.
Definitely. Yeah. And I know his self-confidence was at an all-time low. And as we said before, confidence is key.
No, he's wearing like old OP t-shirt.
Yeah.
Board shorts.
He's wearing bum equipment sweatpants.
Yeah. He's not feeling good. This man needs the finer fabrics.
Yeah.
This is such a great like metaphor for taking care of yourself and giving you that confidence.
You need that self-confidence.
No, he's like, buy a few nice pieces.
Right.
Spend the money.
Downsize your wardrobe. Get rid of all the fast fashion. Just buy a few very classic pieces. So he's showing up at these banks looking a little shitty. And law enforcement is like, oh my God, we have this serial bank robber, this like weird guy.
Yeah.
He looked so bad that they didn't even like, and there were obviously probably new officers on the squad, but like people didn't clock that this was Eddie Dodson.
I just picture him looking like Nick Nolte and Down and Out in Beverly Hills. Like coming in.
Desi.
What?
William J. Redder gave him the nickname the Down and Out in Beverly Hills Bandit. Oh, my God. Because of Nick Nolte in that movie.
Oh, my God.
That's literally was the nickname he gave him.
That is crazy because that was my image.
Yeah. No, he said it was like that was the vibe.
That is funny.
So by April, he was on his sixth bank robbery in this new era of bank robbing.
I mean, that's still great.
It's really good.
Yeah.
In 4 months.
They always make it seem like you can't even do it once and get away with it. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's sort of what I always think. Like, well, it's impossible.
I think this guy was incredibly lucky and in a unique position.
Yeah. Yeah.
I still think robbing a bank sounds like one of the scariest things.
I also think I've heard in the past that we don't always hear about every bank robbery that happens.
Well, I couldn't even find newspaper articles for these robberies. It's not like it's big breaking news.
They don't want us to know.
Is that what it is?
Charm. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard. That's why we only hear the big bust.
Right. When they're arrested.
Yeah.
We hear like bank robbing ring.
But I think it happens more often than we think.
Maybe. That's wild.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's so crazy. So on the afternoon of April 9th, 1999, Eddie Dodson casually strolled into a bank in Brentwood while he was eating an apple. When he got to the teller, he said, "God, it's windy outside." Then he put his black leather bag on the counter and said, "Actually, you know what? I have a gun. Please give me your cash."
He had zero segue. Actually. God, small talk.
It's so windy outside. Excuse me. I have a gun.
Actually, I'm robbing you.
The teller handed over the cash, $1,004, and Dodson walked away. The following week, Dodson walked up to a woman getting into her car, a champagne-colored Mercedes on Pico Boulevard in Beverly Wood. He was like, "I'm so sorry, but I have to borrow your car. I need to take my friend to the hospital." He then flashed his toy gun, and she was like, "Okay," and she handed over her keys. But before he took off, he asked her for her phone number so that he could arrange to give the car back.
Aww.
He then drove the car to Malibu, where he robbed a bank for $3,000.
So he didn't have to take his friend to the hospital.
No.
He just lost his car.
Yeah.
He's like, "I'm not taking the bus to Malibu."
Yeah. The stolen Mercedes was seen leaving the bank after the robbery.
Oh my God.
So this car is clocked now.
Shit.
A few days later, the owner of the car got a phone call at her office. It was Eddie Dodson saying that he just needed to borrow it for a little while longer. He's like, "I still have your car."
I have to say, I'd probably be annoyed, but also a little charmed that he was so sincere about not really stealing it.
Honestly, that's basically what she said.
Oh, God.
She was like, "You know, he was really nice."
Being nice goes a long way.
He was really nice about it. Around this time, the FBI got a tip as to the identity of the so-called down and out in Beverly Hills bandit. A tipster said that the robber's name was Eddie Dodson.
I mean, why didn't they think it was him? Like, wouldn't you go through your little Rolodex of bank robbers? Like,
I think he just looked so haggard.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. I'm wondering that too, especially how prolific he is even now.
Wouldn't you just look at him again? Because everyone probably knew about him from the first round. Although it is many years later.
It's over 10 years later. Well, it's like 15 years later.
Yeah, it's 15 years later. So it's possible the whole precinct was turned over by that point.
Just William J. Redder is still there.
Oh, the main guy, though. He should have known.
Well, yeah, he's the one who gave him the nickname Down and Out in Beverly Hills. Like, that guy looks like Nick Nolte.
He should have known.
He really should have known. Meanwhile, Eddie Dodson drove the stolen Mercedes to Santa Barbara, where he robbed a bank for $12,000.
Now he's moving up the coast.
Yeah. But he decided to drive back to
LA.
He's
still doing heroin.
Yes.
Like, he's still, like, he's supporting his drug habit.
He's getting high.
Yeah.
Following this robbery, he drove back to LA and ran into his friend Charlie at Swingers. And Charlie noticed just how sick Eddie looked.
Aww.
Dodson told Charlie that he was robbing banks again. By this time,
imagine that being your friend. Like, come on, Eddie. You got to stop robbing banks.
Please. The heroin, I understand that. But the banks, come on.
You're just going to get caught again.
By this time, a bank surveillance image of Dodson had been on the local news. So the walls are closing in. A few days later, after following up on some more tips, Special Agent Andy Chambers spotted the stolen champagne-colored Mercedes parked at the Farmer's Daughter Motel on Fairfax. The front desk guy told Andy that Dodson was upstairs right now in room 117. Andy called for backup, and this backup included FBI agents and robbery homicide detectives. The detectives stood in the parking lot and drew their guns, ordering Eddie to come down as they're shouting this through a bullhorn. Dodson had spent his time in this hotel room just holed up, shooting heroin and making a mess. Like, it was a complete disaster in there. as these cops are shouting through a bullhorn, like, come out with your hands up.
It's like, calm down. He has a toy gun. What's he going to do? Stick you with a needle? Like,
Eddie's hearing all this ruckus outside. There's like the sirens or whatever, the lights.
Yeah.
And the guns drawn. He gingerly parted the curtains to the window and peered outside.
He's like, what is this all about?
He then cracked the door open and shouted, I'll be down in a minute. He then made a phone call from his room. He left a message for a friend that was like, look, the cops are here. It doesn't look good.
He's so chill. Like, how is it possible to be this chill? I'll be down in a minute.
Imagine. Before he left his room, he shot up one last time. Aww. He then put on a fedora and a suede jacket and stepped outside with his toy gun.
I'm sorry. Listen here, you see?
No, Redder was like, he looked like Indiana Jones.
Really?
This is actually really sad.
Yeah, I'm thinking this doesn't end well.
Well, it was clear at this point that Eddie was trying to commit suicide by cop.
Aww.
He's
bringing this gun out.
He's bringing this gun out. He starts waving it around. He's completely and hopelessly like, I mean, meanwhile, I mean, it's like, yeah, he's like this super cool, fun guy, but he's like desperately addicted to heroin.
Right. Like, he's past the point of like,
he's suffering. Yeah. He's suffering greatly. And he can't get out of it. So all the cops are yelling at him to drop the gun, but instead, Dodson, being Dodson, calmly gets in the elevator and takes it down to the first floor. The elevator doors open. They were like, what are you doing?
And he, like, does that Willy Wonka.
Right.
He rolls out, does a cartwheel.
He calmly makes his way to the champagne-colored Mercedes, and the cops are thinking at this point, are we just going to let him drive?
Yep.
As he's about to get in the car, he's tackled by one of the officers, and he's restrained. Eddie is shouting at them to just kill him.
Aww.
But he's instead arrested. He was then incarcerated at the hospital for a few days to treat the head injury that he sustained and also some of his withdrawal symptoms. Eddie Dodson then learned that he had contracted hepatitis C and he had advanced cirrhosis of the liver.
Oh, no.
His drug addiction would wind up killing him.
Yeah.
Dodson pled guilty to one count of bank robbery, and he was sentenced to 46 months in prison and 5 years of probation. He was released in October of 2002 after serving 3.5 years. And then he sadly died the following February of his illnesses.
They put him in prison that sick?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's crazy.
No, he was like dying.
What was his age at this
51.
Point?
51.
Oh, he's young.
He's young.
Oh my God. I wasn't sure of his age, but I guess he was doing the first round pretty young, in his 30s.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he was like 35 when he robbed his first bank.
I thought he was older then.
Right.
You know?
No, he was only 35 the first bank robbery.
It's crazy to me that this guy is from North Carolina because there's something very British about him. Do you know what I mean?
Like, well, he gets into a lot of hijinks.
Yeah, but just his like style seems very like European.
He's debonair.
Yes. Oh my God.
Everyone, character. I mean, people had nothing but good things to say about him as a person.
I've never heard the story.
They did.
I don't think.
They did make an independent film that I had never heard of called Electric Slide. Chloe Sevigny's in it. Oh. I don't know who she plays, but, and a guy who I didn't recognize plays Eddie Dodson, and Isabel Lucas is also in it. This came out in like 2015. I had never heard of it.
No, I hadn't either. And I'm not surprised, though, because this should be a movie.
It should be a movie.
I, you know what? Sometimes, too, when you were talking, I was picturing him as a Robert Mitchum type.
Oh, well, that's really hot.
Well, yeah.
He was not, like, built like Robert Mitchum. He was definitely, like, a willowy guy.
I think that's why I thought he was older.
Like, more...
Like when you were the early days, I was picturing him like that. So I thought he was like in his 40s already or something.
Right.
When he was first starting robbing.
We'll post some pictures of him. He's just like a very unassuming guy.
Yeah.
Looks like
a magnetic charm.
A magnetic charm.
I love it.
People could not get enough of him.
I'm sad. I want to hang out with him.
I know.
I want to be charmed.
Yeah.
I like being around a charmer who's actually nice.
Like I want to go to a meeting with him.
Yes. We could save him.
I could fix him.
Get him back on the right track.
Get him back on track.
We go antiquing.
Reopen that antique shop.
I know. What a life.
What a life.
That's so sad.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad he didn't die by cop.
Yeah.
That's just like the worst.
Awful. But yeah, I mean, basically like, I mean, a pretty, obviously an very, very unusual story, but like
a sad ending for sure.
A lot of hallmarks of drug addiction, not in the specific details, but in the actions and the decisions, the decision-making process.
Well, it just sucks that at least in the first prison stint, that like that could have been a great opportunity to get clean.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
I know a lot of people who have gotten clean in prison, and unfortunately, not always the case.
Well, and this is where his charm was actually probably a detriment to him, because he was able to get connections to get stuff inside prison probably very easily.
Yeah.
Because everyone liked him.
Who wanted to say no to Eddie Dodson?
It's like, yeah, make him happy. He makes you happy.
Anyway, I'll post some pictures on our Instagram page. If you want to hear this episode and other episodes ad-free, you can go to patreon.com/HollywoodCrimeScene. And we also have a lot of bonus content up there as well.
Yeah, go check it out.
Go check it out. We'll put a link in the show notes. And we'll see you later this week for the mini episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.